Hi everyone, I'm Dr. Dustin Castestio. I'm an associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology at McMaster University, where I work as a family planning and sexual health specialist. A group of us attended the European Society of Gynecology conference virtually between November 10th and 13th of this year, and we wanted to provide you with some rapid review of some of the abstracts and sessions that we participated in. So it's my pleasure to hand things over to Dr. Ari Sanders, who's going to tell us a little bit about one of the sessions that he attended. Ari, tell us about yourself.
All right, so thank you for having me here today. And like you said, my name is Dr. Ari Sanders, and I'm an obstetrician gynecologist currently practicing in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm going to talk today about a study that was presented at this conference by Dr. Monica Bertoia on a longitudinal cohort assessing the effectiveness of extended levonorgestrel-containing combined oral contraceptive use. So, more commonly known as Seasonique, the contraceptive being studied here is a 91-day levonorgestrel-containing combined oral contraceptive, or COC. Now, the safety and efficacy of this contraceptive has been studied extensively before, but this study is a post-hoc analysis of its effectiveness in what the authors have described as a real-world setting. And so the objective of this study was therefore to evaluate the unintended pregnancy rates among females exposed to this 91-day levonorgestrel-containing combined oral contraceptive, or COC. So this study used a U.S. health insurance claims from the Optum research database to identify females over the age of 12 who used either the 91-day levonorgestrel-containing COC or the similar 28-day version of this pill. And this was between the dates of 2006 and 2017. So the two groups were propensity score matched, and using diagnosis and procedure codes for deliveries and abortions, pregnancies that occurred during active treatment episodes were evaluated to assess for contraceptive effectiveness. So this slide outlines two example users. The first user here is a 91-day cycle user. So this user had a single treatment episode, which included a 91-day course for the medication plus a 30-day grace period. And the grace period is because users don't always start their medication on the first day it was prescribed, but also due to the possibility of missed pills, a user may not necessarily complete the medication exactly 91 days after starting it. And below you have an example 28-day user. So the 28-day users were given only a 14-day grace period. And you can see here that this user made up two treatment episodes. So the first treatment episode with two prescriptions, and then there's a second treatment episode with a third prescription. And the reason for this was that this third prescription was started months after the second prescription and its grace period had ended. Now, a pregnancy that occurred during a treatment episode or grace period was coded as an unintended pregnancy, while a pregnancy that occurred outside this time course was an intended pregnancy. So as I mentioned, the groups were propensity score matched and for the most part balanced. You can note here that there was a greater percentage of patients with endometriosis in the 91-day cycle group in comparison to the 28-day cycle group. And this may serve as an indication for the potential greater use of a 91-day regimen for menstrual suppression and symptom relief rather than contraception alone. However, specific data on reasons for contraceptive initiation were not captured in this study. And then this slide summarizes the results of the study. So first, you can see the number of treatment episodes in each group, followed by the absolute number of pregnancies during those treatment episodes. And this amounted to a low unintended pregnancy rate in both groups. So 0.76% in the 91-day users and 1.06% in the 28-day cycle users. So the group also went on to compute Pearl indices for both groups, but it should be noted that these Pearl indices were computed using retrospective observational data and therefore should be interpreted with caution. So the authors concluded that they observed a low rate of unintended pregnancies in the 91-day levonorgestrel-containing COC users, but there were a few limitations to consider. First, they couldn't compare the two groups due to unmeasured and unreported factors that may have been imbalanced between the groups. And examples given were timing of planned conception, sexual activity, and the use of other non-prescription contraceptives. They also note that additional measurement errors may have occurred due to the allotted grace periods, as well as the predetermined gestational lengths built into the methods of this study. But I think that we need to expand a little bit more on the study limitations to get a better understanding of the unintended pregnancy rates that they've seen in this study. So certainly the authors have documented impressively low unintended pregnancy rates in both groups, but we should remember that typical use COC failure rates tend to be closer to 5 to 9%. So why are we seeing such low rates in this study? Well, first, there were no measures of compliance, tolerability, or duration of use. And if the duration of treatment episodes were short, this certainly would limit the potential for an unintended pregnancy to occur during that treatment episode. Second, some unintended pregnancies may not have been picked up in claims codes, especially if medical care was not sought. And then third, this study used private insurance claims database in the US, which ultimately will lead towards a selection bias and a potential for lower unintended pregnancy rates in both groups. And then fourth, there is no information on de novo versus experienced COC users. And experienced users generally will have lower COC failure rates. And it can be assumed that many of the 91-day cycle users may have been experienced users. So this would also potentially lead to lower unintended pregnancy rates, potentially in both groups, but certainly in the 91-day cycle users. And then another limitation in the study is that we don't have information about reasons for contraceptive initiation in either group. So it is unclear how many patients were using contraceptives for contraception versus those who are using contraceptives for menstrual suppression and may not have actually been sexually active at all. And I would assume that this type of use would have been more likely in the 91-day cycle group. And this ultimately would result in an element of measurement bias that would exaggerate low unintended pregnancy rates and could explain some of the findings that we're seeing here. So while this study does present impressive real-world effectiveness of the 91-day levonorgestrel-containing COC, due to the various limitations that we've discussed here, I think we do have to be quite careful about generalizing these results to our real-life practices. Thank you.
That's great, Dr. Sanders. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. I think what this study does, which is really interesting, is it kind of shows us a hybrid version of what a perfect use and a typical use failure rate looks like, right? You have use in ideal conditions. You've got a group of patients that have access to these medications, high acceptability. It's not really a pearl index because we didn't censor other forms of contraceptive use. And again, there could be some aspects of that. And what you see is that, with continued use of pills, adherence tends to sort of improve with time. This is really, we tend to think of our longer acting or extended use pills as sort of like a second line agent, right? Most people don't start with those. And so I think it's nice to see that, good reminder for us, adherence is still the big driver of, the contraceptive effectiveness of short acting medications, right? So if the pills are still at the pharmacy, if the pills are on your nightstand, they're not doing the job that they're going to do. I know that your practice involves a lot of subspecialty gynecology. Maybe you could kind of help the audience to decide when would you typically think about using an extended use pill, either for contraception or for other indications, versus using a standard 21-day pack, or do you do anything else with your 21-day pills in terms of extended use?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I agree. I think this study does show that, especially if we are capturing mostly experienced users here with this medication, maybe we are looking at sort of closer to a perfect use unintended pregnancy rate as opposed to typical use. My practice does focus a lot more on heavy menstrual bleeding in the setting of fibroids and menstrual pain in the setting of endometriosis. And so certainly I am a much heavier user of extended cycle regimens when I am using an oral contraceptive. And, you know, that is one of my concerns with this study is that potentially, you know, we are capturing a lot of those patients who are not necessarily sexually active or due to pelvic pain, they have very infrequent intercourse. And so certainly when we're trying to manage patients' menstrual symptoms, extended cycle regimens, either with a 91-day levonorgestrel containing COC or another COC that we just use the hormone-containing pills and skip the hormone-free portion of the pill, you know, those are both options for patients who have menstrual symptoms that we're trying to suppress and either suppress entirely and eliminate periods altogether or minimize the number of periods that they experience over the course of the year. And certainly, you know, one of the things that I find in my practice is if that does help in controlling certainly symptoms like pelvic pain, those patients who are less sexually active due to symptoms at the onset of treatment may increase their sexual activity as their symptoms are suppressed moving forward. And so obviously we want to make sure that we also have a good option in terms of contraception for them if they do become sexually active and you know, continue to not desire fertility at that point in time. And so I think this study does show that, you know, this is, you know, one potential option in patients who potentially are more experienced users that can potentially accomplish both of those factors.
Great. And one more question, not sort of interrelated to the study. Unscheduled bleeding can be a real challenge with birth control pills, and you've mentioned menstrual suppression, and I think each of us has our own approach to that. For the patient that you have on a COC on an extended use basis and they're experiencing unscheduled bleeding, what's your sort of approach, or do you have any tips and tricks for viewers?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, the vast majority of the time when I have a patient on long-term COC use and they schedule or and they experience unscheduled bleeding, I usually have them take a break from that medication for 5 to 7 days and then restart. And oftentimes that will sort of reset things and eliminate that unscheduled bleeding. And I find most of the time, and this is potentially where the 91-day cycle came into play, is that most of the time that does occur somewhere in the realm of 3 to 4 months. And so I do preface continuous COC use with my patients with that expectation.
Great. Yeah, I think really important points. You know, a short HFI, hormone-free interval, is good. So, you know, extended use, you don't have to make them take a full week off and experience the entirety of their menstrual cycle. And, you know, everyone has that sweet spot. So that people who can get away with longer can extend their use longer. For those who experience unscheduled bleeding at the 2-3 month mark, then it's reasonable to do it at that time. That's great. Dr. Sanders, thank you for your time. Thanks for attending the conference on our behalf. To be fair, you were doing it from home too. You didn't get to go to Venice either. So thanks for that. And thanks for a couple of extra tips and tricks on the side. Really appreciate your time today.
Great. Thanks for having me.